Thanks for downloading or listening to this overview of the 2025 changes to competencies and code of conduct for psychologists. This summary was produced using the Google tool Notebook LM and a range of documents primarily from APRA and the APS. To see these documents, go to the supervision page at activeliving.com.au and navigate your way to the 2025 changes to competencies page, where you'll also find this recording. One error in the recording that I wanted to bring to your attention is about three quarters of the way through, the male podcaster says we've got a year to prepare for this. But in fact, this was recorded in late July 2025, so we only have about 5 months to prepare for this. With that said, please enjoy.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to cut through the noise, get straight to the insights that will really matter for you in your practice. The world of psychology, it's always changing, isn't it? And staying ahead, it's more than just ticking boxes. It's really fundamental to providing safe, ethical, effective care. So today we're doing a really crucial deep dive. We're looking at some pretty significant updates from the Psychology Board of Australia. That's the revamped Code of Conduct and the Enhanced Professional Competencies. And remember, both of these kick in on December 1st, 2025. We know you're busy. So think of this as your shortcut, your essential briefing. We've pulled out the key bits from the official document so you're informed, you're prepared, without needing to wade through everything yourself.
That's exactly right. And look, these aren't just, you know, minor tweaks. They really represent a very deliberate shift. It's all about strengthening public trust and making sure our practice across Australia is, well, truly contemporary, ethical, and competent. It's about aligning with the highest standards, not just for compliance sake, but really for the benefit of every single person we work with.
Okay, so let's start there. Let's unpack this new code of conduct. What are the really big shifts? What are the main things practitioners need to get their heads around with this update?
Well, I think what's really insightful is how the board approached this. They've used a recently reviewed shared code of conduct as the foundation. This is the code that most professions in the national scheme use. It's a very intentional move. The board clearly expects it to have a real positive impact, you know, on client health, consumer safety, especially for those who might be more vulnerable. So the core idea, I think, is broadening our whole ethical view.
Broadening the view.
Yeah. And when you drill down into the specifics, there are a few key areas that have been, well, either newly included or clarified quite significantly. First up, there's a much stronger, much more explicit focus on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health and cultural safety. And this isn't just like a mention. The code now fully integrates specific practice standards and content on cultural safety. This was informed by advice from APRA's Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Health Strategy Unit, and it uses that agreed definition of cultural safety within the national scheme.
So it's embedded now, fundamentally.
Exactly. The insight is that cultural safety isn't separate anymore. It's seen as foundational to all ethical practice. That's huge. Second, they've added a specific section on bullying and harassment.
In the workplace context.
Precisely. It expands our ethical duties beyond just the client relationship right into our professional environment. It gives much needed clarity on our responsibilities in the workplace, and it outlines how the board and APRA will handle these issues. So the aha moment here is that ethical practice now explicitly includes fostering safe, respectful workplaces. Do no harm applies to colleagues too, not just clients.
That makes a lot of sense.
Then there's more clarity around risk management and governance. The new code really highlights our professional responsibilities when it comes to applying governance principles. This is super important in complex services, obviously, but even if you're a solo practitioner, it means thinking about how you run things, intake, records, decisions with a governance mindset.
So thinking systemically, not just individual cases.
Yeah, exactly. Systemic risks, professional resilience at an organizational level, even if your organization is just you. And finally, there's new guidance on business practices. This is specifically aimed at psychologists who are employers. It tackles things like performance targets or other business practices that might conflict with the code.
Oh, interesting. So ensuring the business side doesn't compromise the ethical side.
That's the core insight. Ethical considerations now clearly cover the commercial aspects of running a practice. Business decisions can't undermine client welfare or our professional integrity.
Wow. Okay. That really does signal a shift towards a more holistic view of ethical responsibility. It's not just the therapy room anymore. But for these principles to work, we need the skills, the frameworks. Which brings us neatly to the enhanced professional competencies, also starting December 1st, 2025. You mentioned threshold professional competency, the minimum needed for safe practice and individual scope of practice. How do these updated competencies change what it means to be competent today?
Right. So we still have the 8 core competencies. That hasn't changed. But several have been, as the board puts it, intentionally strengthened and explicitly included or updated. It's not about adding totally new things necessarily, but more about refining and deepening our understanding of what competence looks like now.
Okay, and I see competency 3 looks particularly interesting. Exercises professional reflexivity, purposeful and deliberate practice, and self-care. This focus on our own well-being feels really important, but maybe also a bit daunting for busy practitioners. What's the real message here?
That's a really vital point. The core message is about sustainability and ultimately effectiveness. Let's break down those terms a bit. So reflection, we mostly know that. It's looking back at something that happened, an event, an action, to learn from it. How can I do better next time?
Standard CPD stuff, yeah.
Kind of, but reflexivity goes deeper. It's about examining yourself, continuously questioning your own biases, your values, your motivations, understanding how you impact others and your practice.
Ah, so it's more inward looking, more about self-awareness as a skill.
Exactly. It's crucial for tackling unconscious bias, managing power dynamics. Then there's purposeful and deliberate practice. This isn't just doing more hours, it's systematic. Focused attention, breaking things down, intentional repetition, actively seeking specific feedback to get better.
Like practicing scales if you're a musician.
Precisely, like honing a specific skill, not just playing the whole piece over and over. And finally, self-care. We talk about it a lot, but here it's explicit. Behaviors promoting your health, your well-being, personally and professionally. It's framed as absolutely essential for sustaining your ability to practice effectively, preventing burnout, keeping your judgment sharp.
So it's really about building resilience into our professional lives.
Yes. All these elements, reflexivity, deliberate practice, self-care, are now explicitly seen as essential for safe, effective, and sustainable practice. Okay, moving on. Competency 7 demonstrates a health, equity, and human rights approach when working with people from diverse groups. Another area that's seen quite a bit of change.
Yeah, looking at this, the list of diversity areas seems much broader, 17 now, up from 5. Includes migrants, refugees, disability, neurodiversity. What does this wider focus really mean for us day to day?
It reflects the reality of Australia today, doesn't it? The
Yeah.
implications are pretty significant. The key shift here is the language, moving from cultural competence to cultural responsiveness.
Responsiveness.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the difference?
It's not just semantics. It signals a move away from thinking you can just become competent in a culture, like ticking a box. Responsiveness emphasizes ongoing learning, humility, and actively adapting your practice. It means really paying attention to social and cultural factors, learning respectfully from your clients, using strength-based approaches, and working towards equitable healthcare.
And the health equity and human rights part.
That underpins it all. It means actively working to ensure everyone has a fair shot at being healthy, respecting their dignity, upholding their right to make informed decisions about their care no matter who they are or where they come from. It's about dismantling barriers. And closely tied to this is Competency 8. Demonstrates a health, equity, and human rights approach when working with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, families, and communities.
Right. So building on Competency 7, but specifically for First Nations clients, how does this change our approach, especially now cultural safety is embedded everywhere?
Well, this competency gives much more detail on what's expected to ensure client safety and positive outcomes for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. Critically, cultural safety is now explicitly defined as being determined by Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander individuals, families, and communities themselves.
So they determine if care is safe.
Yes. Which means our ongoing critical reflection on our knowledge, our skills, the power dynamics is essential to deliver care that's safe, accessible, responsive, and free of racism. And as you said, the huge shift is that cultural safety is now embedded across all 8 competencies. It's not just one competency's job, it's a fundamental principle guiding everything we do. It really reorients the whole framework.
That's a major shift in thinking.
It is. And finally, just briefly, there's a stronger emphasis on digital competence, which you'll see woven into Competency 6.4 and also Competency 2.
Makes sense given how much tech we use now. What's the core message beyond just knowing how to use Zoom or whatever?
Absolutely. The expectation is we use technology professionally, competently, safely, and appropriately. It's not just about the tech skills. It means being proactive, keeping up with digital skills, new technologies, and critically thinking about the impact on things like privacy, confidentiality, informed consent, data security. even considering the use of AI in practice. It's all about responsible integration, making sure technology helps, not hinders ethical and effective care.
These are definitely substantial updates. December 4th, 2025 feels, well, it's getting closer, but we have over a year. How should psychologists strategically approach this? How do we actually prepare?
The board has actually laid out a really helpful six-step self-assessment process. I'd really encourage everyone to use it. Step one, pretty straightforward. Read the CPD standard and guidelines. Get the big picture on professional development. Step two, read the new professional competencies themselves. Really familiarize yourself with the updated expectations.
Okay, read the docs. Got it.
Step three is where it gets personal. Consider how the competencies apply to your individual scope of practice. Map them onto your actual job, your context. Remember, not every single descriptor under every competency will apply to every role. A manager's scope is different from a clinician's, for example.
Right, tailor it to your own work.
Exactly. Then step four, evaluate your own knowledge, skills, attributes against these competencies. Pay close attention to those enhanced areas 3, 7, and 8. And crucially, seek feedback from peers, supervisors, your workplace. Don't just rely on your own view.
That feedback loop is important.
It really is. And here's a critical point. If your self-assessment shows you're below threshold in an area that's within your scope of practice, something essential for your job that's a potential risk, you need to act quickly, talk to your supervisor, maybe restrict some duties, refer clients until you scale up. If it's an area outside your current scope, it's less urgent, but still something for your learning plan.
Okay, so assess, get feedback, identify gaps, especially those within your current role. What's next?
Step five, create an outcome-focused learning plan. Based on your assessment, what CPD do you need? Prioritize what's most relevant to your work right now. And finally, step six, review and adjust your plan regularly. Learning is ongoing, practice changes. It's a cycle, not a one-off task.
That six-step process seems quite logical, almost like doing an assessment on ourselves. But thinking about CPD, what kinds of activities should we be looking for specifically for these updated areas like reflexivity, cultural responsiveness, digital competence?
Good question. For competency three, reflexivity, deliberate practice, self-care, look for CPD that helps you really grasp reflection versus reflexivity. Find practical strategies for self-care that work for you and really engage with purposeful, deliberate practice. This could mean getting direct observation, reviewing recordings of your sessions, maybe audio or video, or having those structured, focused supervision chats specifically targeting improvement areas.
So active skill building, not just passive learning.
Exactly. For competency seven, diverse groups, prioritize CPD that genuinely deepens your understanding of cultural identity's impact. Look for training on working effectively with diverse groups, understanding intersectionality, collaborate with culturally responsive services, and importantly, use supervision as CPD, make discussing your own values, biases, and assumptions a regular part of it.
Okay, and for competency eight, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples.
The board strongly recommends Indigenous-led training seminars, workshops on cultural competency, appropriate assessments, trauma-informed care from an Indigenous perspective. Read key texts like Working Together. Consider cultural mentorship or supervision if possible. Use cultural safety audit tools. The key is collaborative learning, doing it respectfully, in partnership.
Right, prioritizing Indigenous voices and leadership in that learning.
Absolutely critical. And for digital competence, explore OPERA and board resources on virtual care. Learn to critically evaluate digital health apps. Are they effective, secure? Figure out how to integrate evidence-based digital tools ethically. Maybe do a practice audit on your current digital practices. Investigate AI. What are the potentials, the pitfalls? Talk to digital health champions if you know any.
Lots of options there. So it's about targeted CPD, but how should this change our actual day-to-day practice?
Well, beyond the formal CPD, it's about consciously integrating these principles daily. Apply that professional judgment in real situations. Actively use those deliberate practice methods in your routine. Make self-reflection and reflexivity core parts of how you operate as a psychologist, not just something you do for CPD points. And remember, the goal here isn't just more regulation. It's about providing enhanced clarity, a clearer focus for our ongoing development. There's still flexibility in how you meet these standards. Think of it as a roadmap for excellence.
This has been incredibly helpful. It's clear these updated standards are vital for public safety and keeping the quality of psychological services high in Australia. A reminder for everyone, the effective date is December 1st, 2025.
You know, this really brings up a key question, doesn't it? In a field like ours, it's always evolving. How can engaging proactively with these updates go beyond just meeting requirements? How can it genuinely elevate the impact we have, help us build deeper trust, and achieve more equitable outcomes for the people and communities we serve?
That's a powerful thought to end on, a real call to action for all of us listening. Don't wait. Use that self-assessment process. Find your learning opportunities. See this as a chance for real professional growth. Your practice, your clients, and the profession will absolutely benefit.
If you found this recording useful or helpful, you might like to go to the activeliving.com.au supervision page and sign up to my regular newsletter. And by regular, I mean whenever I get around to it, whenever I'm inspired. I'll provide information that can help you practice safely and competently. Thanks for listening.